Welcome to Talking Supply Chain. In each episode, you'll hear from the authors that make Supply Chain Management Review such a special publication. This podcast is hosted by Bob Troublecock, Editorial Director of Supply Chain Management Review. Remember that Bob welcomes your comments now to today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Talking Supply Chain. Let's get strategic, or the emergence of the strategic leader. I'm Bob Troublecock, and joining me today is Stephen A. Melnick. Steve is a professor of operations and supply chain management at Michigan State University. This is the second podcast with Steve in our series on the supply chain manager of the future. We're putting these episodes together based on articles by Steve that began running in late 2016. Today's episode is based on his article, The Emergence of the Strategic Leader. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be back.
Hey, when you started writing these articles, I think the underlying premise was pretty simple. The strategic supply chain leader requires a new kind of leader, one with skills and orientations not currently found in most of the supply chain managers now operating supply chains. Now, that may have seemed like a bold statement at the time. But fast forward a couple of years, and the Harvard Business Review published a now infamous article declaring supply chain management as we know it dead, and calling for just the kind of leader you had in mind. So let's start by talking about what led you to this topic. What were you seeing out there as you talked to companies and managers?
Good question, Bob. The best way of describing the article is that it could be described as an overnight sensation that took about 15 years to develop. That is, when I arrived at the position of writing the article, it came as a result of several developments. First, in 2005, I began a research project at Michigan State University with other people like Rhonda Loomis, where what we were looking at was a very, very simple question. Where was the supply chain going to in the future? Michigan State had a heritage of asking that question. And out of that, certain pieces of the puzzle came out. Then in 2009 to 2010, I worked with Ed Davis at University of Virginia and Chris Zobel at Virginia Tech. And we looked at the humanitarian supply chain. And again, some other pieces came out. And then from 2013 to 2016, I was part of a project funded by APEX called Beyond the Horizon. And we were, again, trying to look beyond the horizon and see what's going on. And again, other pieces came out. And over this time period, when you put things together, you saw the following. Number one, the tactical supply chain, which had been the dominant model, was being replaced by a new approach to supply chain, the strategic supply chain. And that this was a very different creature. The second thing that struck me is that our training and education, either in the professional societies or in the universities, in the MBA programs, tended to look at the tactical aspects of supply chain. And we tended to give lip service, if at all, to this new beast called the strategic supply chain. Then in 2015, a really interesting report came out by Deloitte. And what this report was a skills gap analysis, where what they did is they approached a number of high-level managers and they said, what skills are you looking for in your supply chain managers, both now and into the future? And they were not talking about issues of technology or working in alternative cultures. They were talking about issues like critical thinking. They had painted a very different picture. And then finally, and the real piece that motivated me to write the article was from 2014 to 2016, I was on the board of directors of a major professional society in supply chain management. And towards the end of my tenure there, as we start to explore where is supply chain going, I start to argue that, you know, we have enough people talking about the tactical. And what we've got to do is we've got to start looking at this concept of the strategic supply chain leader and how do we prepare our members to become that leader. Well, I was told in not so kind of terms that I didn't understand the problem. So what I did is I sat down and I wrote this article as kind of a response. It was an attempt by me to, A, respond to these people, but more importantly, for me to clarify in my mind that the supply chain manager that we encountered was not the supply chain leader, and that they required very different skills because they were dealing with a very different creature.
You know, one little data point or one little reaction to what you just said. You know, I put on a conference once a year called the Next Gen Supply Chain Conference, and I'm in the middle of planning for it right now. So the last couple of days, I've been doing conference calls with my advisory board, and kind of maybe not a direct hit to the supply chain manager of the future, but to the supply chain professional and worker of the future. When I start bringing up, and I've talked to 12 of the advisory board members between yesterday and today, when I bring up, you know, what technologies are you working on? What's your biggest hurdle in the supply chain? The number one issue, and it's been at all levels of the supply chain. So some people I've talked to at the floor level, but other people I've talked to are, you know, looking at things like planners and future managers and things. Every one of them says, getting people with the right skills. We can't get people with the right skills. So there is something changing out there that companies are grappling with, you know, and starting to recognize that they're having a challenge finding people with the right skills for the supply chains they're developing. So just adding that as a little bit of you know, maybe another data point to this. That article was a great article. I know it's one of the most highly cited of the articles you've written. It's a long piece, and we're going to give people you know, another reference to it at the end. So we're only going to get to the highlights today. But you drew three critical conclusions. The supply chain is changing. Existing supply chain managers aren't up to the task. And a new type of leader is needed. So why don't you talk about each of those?
Okay. And as I previously noted, you're right. Let's start with the fundamental driver. And I like the fact that you did start with the fact that supply chains are changing. We started to see as far back as 2005 amongst some of the very advanced supply chain companies that there was a transition. And the transition was from a cost-driven, strategically decoupled supply chain to a strategically coupled, value-driven supply chain. Because this transition is significant because of what's involved. With the first type, the cost-driven, strategically decoupled supply chain, what you're offering every customer is the same outcome, lower cost. However, if we look at what's happened in the recent pandemic, the one that's still going on, the thing that really made people aware that this is not maybe the best approach is the fact that it was not able to respond. And suddenly, for lack of a better word, the current pandemic made people aware that the emperor has no new clothes. And so people start to say there's got to be a better way of doing it. With the second, which is the strategically coupled, value-driven supply chain, we start to recognize that supply chains can't simply offer the same outcome to everyone. It's not the case. We're all different. And what it does is it recognizes that supply chains are, A, built around key customers, and that what we offer one key customer differs greatly from what we offer another. When I first introduced the concept of business models as the underlying driver of supply chain management, I did a presentation at the supply chain conference, supply chain council conference. And I remember I spoke just before someone from DuPont, and he got up and he said that what I was saying was exactly right. And he pointed out that DuPont, which he was involved with, he said, we have over 2,800 different supply chains because we have 2,800 different customers. And we have now learned not to recognize that what we do for one customer is going to be different from what we do to another. It also recognizes that we can't treat all customers the same. You know, if you treat all customers the same, the person that you focus to is the person who screams the loudest. And in some cases, that's not really the key customer. And the third thing it recognizes is that we have to offer more than value, than cost. That value to a customer is going to be driven by things. For one customer, maybe cost. For another one, it's going to be responsive, or it can be security of either product or information, sustainability, resilience, or innovation. The other thing we learned is that you cannot excel at all elements. The supply chain that does really great, does a great job on cost, often is not the most responsive. We saw that in the pandemic. So therefore, if we're going to pick which dimension of value we're going to focus on, we've got to go back to the notion of value. And the notion of value lies in the customer. So we have to know who our key customer is. And finally, as soon as you put it that way, you suddenly understand clearly the linkage between the C-suite and the supply chain. Issues like who's our key customer, how do we compete, which really drive investment in supply chain, are ultimately not tactical decisions, they're strategic decisions. And it's one in which the supply chain leader is not simply an observer or someone who is given orders to, but in essence, he is essentially a participant. So, and then finally, we kind of recognize that the traditional supply chain was the cost-driven one, was a one-trick pony. Once you got beyond cost, what else could you do? So given that part, that led to the question, so how does this affect supply chain managers? Well, if you look at many supply chain managers, and remember Alan Dunn, who was the chair of the board of directors for APEX at 2015, pointing it out, they tend to be managers first and foremost. They are tactical. They are strongly functional. They focus on things like supply chain excellence and execution. They're driven by cost and lead time considerations. To them, complexity is negative and it's got to be eliminated. They desire stability. These are okay skills if we're dealing, it are important, but the problem is they don't work in today's environment where we're dealing with the strategic supply chain, where we're dealing with something which is very dynamic. For that, we need a kind of a different creature. And what became clear from the various studies we had done is this supply chain leader operated very differently. The first thing they did is they tended to work at the edges. So whereas the traditional manager worked within the silo, the supply chain leader worked at the edges. They are the interface people. They worked with marketing, engineering, top management. They worked with customers. They worked with suppliers. So because they understood that that's really an important transition. The second thing is they understood that the issue was not the solution, it was the problem. In many organizations, I've found that there's such an emphasis on getting a solution that we often have a very poor understanding of what the problem or objective we're trying to achieve. And these people were really problem masters. They understood what Kettering said way back in the early 1900s when he said, a problem well stated is a problem half solved. So they're not interested so much in the right answer. They're interested in asking the right questions. They view the process and the operation of the supply chain through the eyes of the customer. And they understood that the eyes of the customer were captured within performance measures. They accepted uncertainty and complexity. In fact, what they did is they not only understood that uncertainty and complexity were, in essence, part of the game, they understood that complexity, which came from the customer, was different from complicated, which came from us. And so what they did is they accepted complexity and they tried to drive out complications. They emphasized fast decision-making. The reason being, in today's market, you know, deliberate decision-making, while a luxury, was not something we could do. We had to react quickly. They also emphasized that they wanted supply chains which were not optimal, which is the bread and butter of many consultants and also many universities. They wanted supply chains which were robust. If we make an error, let's see if this, let's have the system that can cope with it. And they understood that they were leaders, not managers. So if you look at that, a new supply chain requires a new type of manager. It's just like saying you can't take someone who can ride a bicycle and put them on a motorcycle and expect that they're going to be successful.
So we just diagnosed the problem. So let's talk a little about the symptoms that you were observing. In other words, how come? You know, what's happening out there? So some of the things that you identified in the article were the rate of change, complexity as a business driver. You just talked a little bit about that. Competitive pressure, customers' demands, and I think you know what might be most important is it ain't all about cost. Why don't you take us a little deeper into the symptoms?
Okay. And I like what you're doing because a lot of the stuff, many people get in the article, what I really spent a lot of time trying to do was to lay out the differences. And I did that because I want to show people that the things that we do with a manager are not the same things we do with a leader. And a couple of areas really highlighted the differences. For example, let's look at complexity. Lars Magnusson, who was he's from Sweden. He works with Ericsson, really drove this home with me when he said, complexity is what the customer wants. And if the customer wants something, then it's your role to do it. But rather than just simply accepting it, you've got to go through and educate the customer about complexity. So that means you have to tell the customer, get from the customer, what is it they really want? How do we design the product or the process to do this? How do we buy for it? How do we build for it? How do we test for it? And how do we support it once it gets into the field? The point that's raised is that you educate the customer so that when the customer says, I want complexity, you say, okay, but this is what's going to cost you. And if you don't do that, then what you're doing is making the customer think that complexity is a free good. And let's face it, we all like free goods. The other thing that it did is it understood that when we look at complexity versus complications, they're very different. And too often I hear managers talk about complications. Complexity is if, and they're really talking about complication. What's a complication? Well, a complication is the following, and I've seen this occur in too many firms. We have a problem from our suppliers, so what do? We introduce an inspection. So every part goes through it. Now, most good companies will go at it and say, let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of the need for the inspection by working with the supplier to identify the root cause and to get rid of it. So they do it. Guess what they don't do? They don't get rid of the inspection. So the process is now changed. So over time, what you tend to see is a process which differs from what the book describes because we've introduced all of these short-term changes. Or we have a situation where we've acquired a supplier or a competitor and we take their bill of materials and we simply put an alphanumeric designator on the front of every part number and you get one part having two or more different part numbers, which means you can't leverage buys. So what happens there is you create problems and you create confusion. So the first thing we learned is that with complexity, think of it this way, complexity is good, but you educate. Complications are bad. Then let's talk about competitive pressure. Traditionally, supply chains have all been about costs, better, faster, cheaper. Now that's changing. Why is it changing? In the pandemic, we saw the fact that responsiveness became important. Consider Trump when he introduced warp speed or the inoculation. I'm looking at the United States, and we're now in a strange position. Today, if you look at CNN, they have announced that a number of states in the United States have far more supply than they have demand. I'm originally from Canada, And the Canadians would love that situation. They're going through the third wave and it's hitting them. So we're starting to see that complexity is becoming important. We're also starting to see that security is becoming important. February 24th, 2021, President Biden, through the executive order, and you can look it up online, what he called for was a secure, diverse, and resilient supply chain. What he's indicating to the world is that security is no longer something that we leave for the IT people. It's something we got to do. We're starting to see companies like Starbucks and others become really aware of the importance of sustainability, understanding that their customers want evidence of sustainability. I was talking a couple of weeks ago with a manager, high-level manager from Woolworths in Australia. And what he was telling me is, in today's environment, the consumer wants to know where the products are coming from. It's like the old Reagan statement, you know, trust but verify. We're also starting to see people looking at resilience, that if something goes wrong, make sure that it doesn't affect the supply. And finally, innovations. And by the way, innovation itself is changing. In the old days, if you talk to people about innovation, it was either product or process. Now we're starting to see that there's five forms of innovation. There's product, process, customer experience, business model, and supply chain. So what you're starting to see in today's market is cost is becoming a given. And what we're seeing is more emphasis on these new dimensions. But, you know, we can keep on talking, but I think the point we're trying to establish here, the point I'm trying to establish, is that supply chain management and supply chains are the point of inflection. They're the point of significant change. This transition was present way back in 2019. All 2020 did with the emergence of the pandemic is to highlight it, to enforce it. And that means that one of the things we know about points of inflection, the past is no longer a good indicator of the future. The manager we developed for the pre-2019 supply chain may not be the manager we need to move forward with the 2020 supply chain or 2021 supply chain.
Now, in a minute here, I'm going to wrap this up and ask you to tell me, what is the supply chain manager of the future going to look like? But before we get there, let's talk about what are the skills that have traditionally been required of the supply chain leader, and then we can talk about what we really need to go forward.
Okay, and that's a good question, and that's the reason I looked at that is because it's really the easiest to teach. And I'm going to, one of the things I'm going to have you take a step back and understand is supply chain managers are tacticians. They're toolsmiths. They understand how to do things. You tell them what to do and they do it. So what you find is they're internally focused. Let's understand supply chain. And they're perfect. In the siloed business world, they work by themselves. Don't bother them. Just let them go. They tend to be people who deal with execution. They deal with cost. They basically try to do, they tend to be what I call inside out people. What does that mean? They understand what they do and they say, okay, this is what we do. Is there anyone out there who can do it, who wants it? They tend to look at things such as optimality. They look at solutions. These are the people who think in terms of lean MRP. They're now thinking about IoT or 3D printing. So they also tend to look at certain issues. So they're focused about inventory accuracy, about cost. And they have a problem because when they talk to people outside of supply chain, they tend to use a language which is often very foreign. They talk about PPM. And PPM to many top management people sounds like a medical term that should not be described in public, when we know it's really parts per million. Then take a look and contrast it against the supply chain leader. The supply chain leader, we pointed out before, works at the edges. And why do they work at the edges? because they want to understand what their customers want. And the customers could be internal, like marketing or engineering, or it could be external, like customers in the field. Not only are they learning about what their customers want, they're also educating their customers about what they can, what the supply chain can or cannot do. And that becomes really important in a dynamic environment, which is what we're seeing right now with the emergence of new technology. There are also people who are educators. They're learners and they're educators. They're learning about the needs of the key customers and the stakeholders. They're teachers. They're teaching these people what the supply chain can and can't do. There are also people who are converting technology from technology into capabilities. If you have IoT, that's great, but what does it mean for me? How does it affect marketing? They also are critical thinkers. And this is something which I find plaguing everybody in supply chain. Often critical thinking is described as this very, very esoteric concept. And in my mind, supply chain leaders are critical thinkers because they understand that fundamentally issues that garner a lot of top management concern, like inventory or lead time or cost or quality or performance measures, are not problems, they're symptoms. They indicate something is wrong and that the worst thing management can do is to attack the symptom. Because if you do it, you cause it to occur somewhere else or to reappear at another point in time. In contrast, the supply chain leader tries to understand what are the root causes and to educate management about that. And I can tell you the number of stories I've seen firsthand of what happens when you don't do it. And some of the things are hilarious in hindsight, but they were painful to go through. So in addition, finally, the supply chain leader understands that their responsibility is to change the culture of their organization. Edgar Schein put it best. Now, he's the founder of organizational culture when he said managers work within cultures, leaders change culture. And the reason that's so important is because we're introducing new ways of doing things. And if you don't understand the culture piece, and here's something to think about. I will challenge you to go look at the universities, the colleges, the professional societies, and ask the following: to what extent do they expose their supply chain students to the issue and importance of culture? In fact, when we do it, we tend to do it simplistically. How's that? If I give you a better way, you'll do it. Balderdash. We found too many instances, if I give you a better way, people just give you lip service, selective hearing, or else they make the measures look as if to appear as if something's changing when in fact they're not. If you're going to change culture, you have to learn skills like you have to discredit the current way of doing things. So if you put those together, what you're starting to see is the supply chain manager and the supply chain leaders both have roles. We have too many managers. We have too many warehouse managers. We have too many planners. We have too many schedulers. We have too many buyers. We don't have enough supply chain leaders.
Steve, last question. So we've just covered a lot of material, and it's all revolving around this idea of the strategic supply chain. And, you know, going back to where we started with that HBR article that said the supply chain, as we know it, is dead and we're going to require new skills. Talk a little bit about the skills that are going to be required for the future. What's it going to take to get there?
That's a good question. And this is going to be one where I'm going to punt. And let me tell you why I'm going to punt. When I wrote the article, I wrote it because my goal was Michigan State University, where I teach, we were going through a process of reassessing how we form the programs up. And to really change this, you have to have an awareness that if we're going to be that it's easy to teach a manager, it's more difficult to teach or develop a leader. The reality is organizations are asking for leaders. And professional societies and universities, for the most part, are creating managers. And the reason being because if you to create a manager, you teach him how to solve problems. You teach him to use Excel. You teach him to use Problem Solver. You teach them to use algorithms. Whereas a leader steps back and they're critical thinking. They're more process. They think more about what does this mean? And that's the challenge that I had. Because essentially, we need the leader because people are now recognizing that the strategic importance of the strategic supply chain has never been higher. Thanks to the pandemic and the problems encountered by supply chain managers at all levels, understanding how the supply chain can strongly influence the moments of truth and therefore how the firm is influenced. So therefore, supply chains are strategic. Secondly, we're starting to see more and more supply chain management types in the C-suites, a good example being Tim Cook of Apple. And the third is we're starting to see supply chains being used to achieve social goals like minority development or issues such as sustainability. So getting back to the issue, how do we develop this? Well, that's the challenge. For the professional societies, I don't have much hope there. And the reason I don't have much hope there is because their business model, how they make money, is based on certification. Certification is first and foremost content-based. The strategic leader is a process-based person. They're thinking at different issues, different levels. The second issue is if I look at universities, universities are basically in the business of, they teach managers too. And what they teach reflects the type of research they do. And that becomes a problem. Many of my colleagues in universities, both in the United States, Canada, Australia, across the world, who do research and who teach in supply chain often have very little experience with supply chain, real-world supply chain management. They understand the theory and the numbers, but not the practice. They're also being pushed to this by the referee journals, which reward research that is really not strategically orientated. In fact, one of the things that makes me feel kind of sad is I'm one of the last generation of research who came out of a time when we really saw this supply chain as something that required us to work closely with industry. So we have a gap. And the gap has to be filled. And I've talked with a number of managers and leaders, both in the United States and across the world, and they're now convinced that they, the firm, not the universities or the professional societies, have to train and educate this new generation of management. And this is a shame, and this is an area I'm struggling with. How do I convince universities, which should be the areas that teach this, to basically be willing to say, just as Wick Skinner in the 1960s, Wickham Skinner in the 1960s changed the paradigm of manufacturing when he said, manufacturing is strategic, not tactical. But to do that, he found himself publishing not in traditional journals, but in Harvard Business Review. And it took a long time before people start to recognize that what he was talking about was really very, very pertinent. And we are now in the same position. And that's the issue I'm struggling with right now. I don't see professional societies doing it, who are basically in the business of working with people who want to become experts. And I'm kind of challenged by how you do it in universities. But it's a gap. And the reality is nature and business both abhor a vacuum. So this is why I said I'm going to punt on this one.
That was a long punt, but a good one. And, you know, one data point, Steve, to one of the last things that you talked about, which is companies thinking that they're now going to have to do this training themselves. Again, this is an anecdote of one, so buyer beware. But one of the individuals on one of my conference calls the other day is a senior executive at, you know, a Fortune 500 company. And while he wasn't talking about the lack of professional societies or universities, as you just pointed out, but was saying that his company has realized it has to make a major investment in internal training. And he wasn't talking about the floor level, but rather, you know, the middle management and management level. So, you know, here was one example of a Fortune 500, you know, global company saying that, you know, one of the investments they realize they need to make in their supply chain is in training and education of their leaders. So I think companies are realizing that. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank Steve Melnick for joining me today. And be sure to read The Emergence of the Strategic Leader. You can find it by typing that title into the search box on SCMR.com. I hope you'll be back for our next episode. Until then, for Supply Chain Management Review and Talking Supply Chain, I'm Bob Troublecock.
Talking Supply Chain is produced by Supply Chain Management Review and Peerless Media. You can find it on scmr.com, on iTunes, or under SC247, or just Google SC247 podcasts. For more information, be sure to visit scmr.com. We hope you'll join us again.